Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Pei Vav. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will commence from the bottom line of Daf Pei Hei Omid Beis. The Mishnah mentioned Ein Mevi'in Loi Mibeis Hazvalim, and it went on to say also Ein Mevi'in Anpakten V'im Hevi Kosher. So the Mishnah indicates that one who would bring for Nesachim Anpaktin, that would be okay. We're dealing, of course, with issues of what type of oils are suitable and or unsuitable for the Menachos. So the Mishnah says Anpaktin would be okay. What that is, the Gemara will deal with a bit later. However, the problem the Gemara raises is that we find in a Tanaic source, just the opposite. V'hotanya ein mevi'in anpaktin v'im hevi posel v'pnei shuhu sarof. This source says that if one brings anpaktin, it will be unacceptable because it's viewed as sarof, a mere type of residual substance as opposed to the actual oil itself. The Rabbeinu Gershom terms it zeo bi'alma, which we would paraphrase as saying is some type of simple watery substance that is a byproduct of the oil production, but not the actual oil itself. So we see a contradiction. In our Mishnah, we said that one who brings anpaktin, it's acceptable. And in this source, we see it's unacceptable. Omar Rav Yosef, lo kasha. Rav Yosef resolves and simply points out that these two sources represent two different Tanaic authorities. Ha Rabbi Chiya, ha Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi. Rabbi Chiya will not accept it, and Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi would say it's okay. The Rabbi Chiya Zorek lay. Rabbi Chiya, in his own personal life style, he would throw it out. He wouldn't use it at all. Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi metabel bay. Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi would actually use it for dunking things. Tibul, generally speaking, was something that was characteristic of many people's meals of eating. So the Rashi points out that he would use this and eat it. V'simonech, in order to remember who holds what, remember the following idea. Ashirim mekamtzin. The wealthy are miserly. How does this apply here? Rav Shimon bar Rebbe was the son of the Nossi. He was a wealthy man. Now, this simon doesn't indicate necessarily that he was miserly, but it's characteristic of many wealthy individuals to be miserly. So the rich person here was unwilling to part with it. He would use it, even though it may be of lesser quality. But because of this trait, if you will, he would use it. Once again, maybe he himself didn't have that trait, but it's a way to remember that he was the one that held its kosher. Rabbi Chiya, however, was not known as to be a wealthy man. He threw it out. The Pasuk in Megillas Esther says, Shisho Chadoshim B'Shemen Hamor. My Shemen Hamor. What is meant by the more oil? Rav Huna Bar Chiya Omar, Sat Kisa. That's a term that apparently was known to the Gemara. So, as far as Rav Huna is concerned, Sat Kisa is the explanation of Shemen Hamor. Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba Omar, he doesn't use a name to explain it, but rather describes what Shemen Hamor was. Shemen Zayis Shelo Hevi Shlish. It's olive oil that comes from olives that did not develop a third. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Oimer. Rabbi Yehuda, according to the Rashi Ksav Yad, he is addressing Shemen Hamor and saying that Shemen Hamor is Anpaknoin. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Anpaknon, which is his explanation of Shemen Hamor, is Shemen Zayis Shelo Hevi Shlish. It is in fact that which we mentioned before, olive oil coming from olives that have not developed a third. Loma Sochin Oisoi. Why do people smear this on themselves? Shemeshir es haseir umadin es habosar. It's a depilatory. It removes hair and also creates a certain fresh, healthy complexion of one's skin or one's flesh. That's ma'adin es habosar. Ein mevien min hagargarin shenoshru v'mayim. The Mishnah indicated that one is not to bring from olives that were soaked in water. Tanu Rabbanan, the Tanaic source indicates Shemen Zayis, and now it's going to have a list of different types of situations where we would not accept the olive oil that comes from the following situations. So Shemen Zayis, Kovush. This would be olive oil that comes from pickled olives. Sholuk, boiled. Sharui, soaked. Vishel shmorim. This is another characteristic of the olive oil that would not be acceptable. Shmorim, in other contexts, is indicative of something that's yeast-like. Or in this case, shmorim, more accurately, would be with debris, lees in it. The term shmorim you find by shmorim shel yayin, that's a reference to grape lees. So in the context of oil, it would be oil that has debris in it. V'shel reyach ra, nor from oil that has a bad, a foul odor. Lo yavi, so we say about all of these things not to bring. Vim hevi posul, if he does bring, it's unacceptable. Boi rabo. Rabo raises a question that we've seen raised numerous times in the last couple of dapim regarding one who sanctifies those items that are not acceptable. So he asks, Higdisho mahu shiloke olov mishum balmum. If one sanctified these unacceptable types of oils, would he be guilty of receiving lashes for the offense of sanctifying a blemished item? Two sides of the question, and you can see we've indicated this as we have in the past. Aleph, oi dilma, the next line you see squiggle underline, oi dilma, beis. Kevon de posel kebal mumdomi. Do we say that since it's unacceptable, so it would have the same legal status as a blemished item? And just like we say that there is a chiyuv, one is guilty of malchus for sanctifying a blemished animal, so too with regard to blemished oil, so to speak. Oy dilma ein bal mum elo bevehema. Or it could be that the problem of balmum, the problem of blemish, is applicable only to animals and not to oil. And therefore, if he did sanctify this blemished oil, so to speak, he would not be guilty of lashes. Teku. This remains unresolved. We now have a Mishnah that in our Gemara markings, you will see, is covered with a great deal of markings. This is what we sometimes term a densely marketed source. The hope is, in our Gemara marking system, that you will find great benefit from the plethora of markings that you witness in this case, as in other similar situations. The style of markings that we use in the Mishnah will continue into a Brisa that appears in the Gemara right after the Mishnah. The Brisa is a very clear parallel to the Mishnah, hence we opted to continue the same style of markings. So as we glance to the key and the outside margin where we present the Nosei and Mivneh, the Nosei, generally speaking, is the topic heading, and Mifneh is a structural note. They often appear separate. In this case, we combined these notes. So if you look in the outside margin, you see the Nosei Mifneh. Mifneh, as we say, features the explains the structure, or more accurately, we try to emphasize what the role of the markings is. So in this case, we have a house form that will appear in the Mishnah. In this Mishnah, we will see Gimel Pa'amim B'Shana Yesh Likitas Zaysim. The gathering of olives takes place three times a year. The nature of olives is that they don't all ripen at the same time, but in the course of the year, there are three times or seasons, three seasons, three times where one can harvest his olives. Uvechol pam yesh gimel shlovim shel yitziras shemen, and in each time period there are three stages of oil production. Now, in the Mishnah, we will use extensive numbering and lettering to indicate these different time periods. The Roman numerals that you'll see in the Mishnah accompany the house forms, indicating the primary three seasons. Under each season, you will notice 1, 2, and 3. Those are the three stages we just referred to. And you will also notice the use of an aleph and beis. That's to contrast or present the Tanakama and Rabbi Huda, where they appear to argue. In addition to that, to the house markings, we also feature a double underline, which is explained here simply by the quote that accompanies the double underline, Horishon leMenorah, Vashar leMenachos. That's an indication that the first drops of oil, the first oil, if you will, that is drawn or is produced at each one of these seasonal stages. As we mentioned, each seasonal stage has three, each seasonal collection or gathering of olives has three inherent stages. So the first of the three stages per season, the Mishnah will tell us, is used for the menachos, for the menorah. Let's say that again. The first of the three inherent stages is used for the menorah. The rest can be used for the menachos. The Gemara will point out later on that it would not be usur to use the first batch for the menorah, but it was not binding to use the first batch. Let's say that again. It would not be. It would be acceptable to use the first batch for the menachos, but it's not binding to use the first batch for the menachos, and the Gemara will explain that later. Turning to the Mishnah, Shloisha Zaysim. There are three seasons for olive collection, Ubohen Shloisha Shloisha Shmonim, and in each collection time, there are three types of oils. Three types of oils, more accurately, we'll see three levels or stages of production in each season, as will be explained. Hazayis Horishon. The first olive gathering came from olives that were at the top of the trees. Those olives were ripened most quickly because they were subjected to maximum sunshine. The Mishnah says, Megargaroi Barosh Hazayis. He's collecting the olives from the top of the olive tree. The koisesh, he crushes them. The noisein lesoy chasal, he puts them into the basket. Now the word lesoch will be dealt with later, hence there's a dotted underline expression. And the lesoch, you'll see also, is noted as aleph because this will be contrasted with now Rabbi Huda, who has something to say otherwise. Rabbi Huda oimer, svivoy sasal. The Tanakhama says that the first batch of olives, after they're crushed, they're put directly into the basket. Namely, they sit at the bottom of the basket. Rabbi Huda says the baskets were lined with the olives, with the crushed olives. According to both of them, the baskets that we're talking about are woven type baskets, which naturally do not retain liquids. The liquids exuding forth from these crushed olives will ooze forth from the olives and be self-strained, if you will, as the liquid, as the oil, or the liquid, we'll call it the liquid, or the oil exudes from the olives outside the barrel. These are baskets. There will be a receiving kli placed under these baskets to receive the now strained oil. It's also noteworthy that other than the basic crushing of the olives, the crushing here, the kosesh, the crushing of the olives is a process in order to get the olive oil content to exude forth on its own. And that's what was just described by the olives being placed in the basket, either in the bottom of the basket or, as Rabbi Yehuda says, along the sides. Rabbi Yehuda says, Svivois Hasal. Ze hoyo rishon. That's the first batch of the first season. That which exudes from the olives on their own without any additional pressure being placed upon them. Stage two within the first season, chozar v'toyeng b'koyro. The olives, after they finished exuding their liquid that while in the baskets, those olives were then gathered together and a beam was placed on them. You'll notice that we have a little aleph over the word korah and a dashed underline, so we can contrast this with Rabbi Yehuda, who's called Beis. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ba'avonim. The pressure placed upon them was not with a beam, but rather with stones. Ze hoyo sheni. This is the second stage of, or the second batch of oil production during the first season. The Rashi Ksavyad points out, as far as why Rabbi Yehuda says stones and not beam, because the beam, in his opinion, was too heavy to use. As it would also cause a shmorim, debris, to exude forth along with the liquid. Third batch of oil production in first season, chozar v'tochan v'to'an. He then would take the olives that we just had subjected to a heavy weight, grind them up, and then take the ground material and again subject them to a weight. That's chozar v'tochan v'to'an. To'an is to place the weight, the beam, on that, on this now ground up olive substance. Ze hoyo shlishi. This was the third production batch of the first season. Horishon l'menorah v'shar l'menachos. The what we labeled here as number one. The, in effect, that was the substance that exuded on its own from the crushed olives when they were placed in the baskets. That is the Rishon, and that's suitable for the menorah. Vashar l'menachos. The batches of oil produced from stages 2 and 3 would be suitable for menachos. The reason for the separate standard, if you will, that we apply to the menorah comes from the fact that the pasuk, when dealing with the menorah, labels the oil as shemen zayis zoch la maor, and that will be a point that the will be mentioned later. We now see a second house marking. This is a second season for olive collection. Hazayis hasheni megargaroi beroish hagag. The Rashi Ksav Yad points out that the olive trees often grew alongside people's houses. The olive tree was, from what we see here, taller than the house. Then the olive tree would extend, the top of the tree would extend beyond the roof of their houses, so that the roof of their houses came out to be more or less at the same level as, we'll say, the middle of the tree. Being that the tree was higher than the houses, the house roof came out opposite the middle area of the tree. So the second olive season olive collection season was a collection of those olives that were in the middle of the tree. That's what Barosh Hagag means, as we just explained. That's a reference point. It doesn't mean the olives are on the roof, but it means the olives are from a point on the tree next to their house roofs, the middle part of the tree. And they don't ripen as quickly as the first batch, because the first season, the first collection was from olives that came from the top of the tree, subjected to extensive sunshine. Here there is less sunshine, so it would require waiting till later in the year to collect them. So this second season was then also subjected to three batches of production. And again, you'll see how the Mishnah is broken down into stages 1, 2, and 3. V'koseish v'nosein l'soch hasal, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, svivo sasal, ze hoyo rishon. This doesn't need further explanation, as it is the same as the first collection season. To'an b'koro, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, we mentioned, let's read that second line again. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, svivo sasal, ze hoyo rishon. That was the first batch produced during the second season. The second batch of oil production during the second season, to'ein b'kora, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ba'avonim, ze hoyo sheni. Again, that is the same as we saw with regard to the first season. Stage 3, Chozar v'tochan v'to'an ze hoyo shlishi. And that too is the same as we saw with regard to the Zayas Harishon. Harishon l'menorah v'shar l'menochas. That too, as we saw before, the first batch produced during the second season was suitable for the high standard of the menorah, and the rest for menochas. Shlishi, Erkno Beves Chabad, the third stage of olive collection came from olives, or was a collection of olives that would not ripen on the tree, probably from a very low part of the tree where there was minimal sunshine, and therefore there was a necessity to, we'll say, provide artificial ripening for them, and that involved Otno Beves Chabad. He would collect the olives in the press, Ad Shi Loke, until they would become soft. In other words, the olives gathered together in a pile in the press. With time, they would become soft. The outer surface would become soft. Their color would change also. This is pointed out in the Rashi. So that's Achi Eloke, Umaleu, Umenagvu Barosh Hagag. You would then take these olives after they became soft, and there was color change. They would then be brought up to the rooftops of their homes. The rooftop, we're speaking, of course, of a flat rooftop. They were spread out there, and menagvo, they were left there to dry. To dry, meaning the Rashi explains that in the softening process, or stage, there would be an exusion of non-oil liquid. There would be an exusion from them, and that we were not interested in having as part of the oil. That was called moil. And in order to get rid of the moil, they were set out to dry on the rooftops. After they were dry from the moil, we're not talking about having them turned into dried out olives, but simply a surface drying. They would then be taken, koseish v'nosin l'soch hasal, those would be crushed, put into the basket, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, svivo sasal, zehoya rishon. This at this point, then, we see what we have seen already before with regard to the first and now the second batch. Toein b'kur b'yidomer b'avonim ze hoyosheni. Chozer v'tochan v'toan ze hoyoshlishi. Harishon l'menorah v'sha'ar l'menochas. So it can be said that as far as the three stages per season of oil production, the same procedures were followed during the first, second, and third seasons. The primary difference here is simply the origin of the olives in the first season, and we said that comes from the top of the tree. The origin of the olives in the second season are those that come from the middle of the tree, and the third season of collection represents those olives that, if left on the tree, would not fully ripen, and therefore they were piled up in the press until they became soft. Ibaya laho. The Gemara's question is focused on a word, which is the appropriate word to have in the Mishnah. There is a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text to enable you to see what point in the Mishnah we are going to be analyzing right now. So the Gemara asks, Megargaro Tanan o Megalgaloi Tanan. The arrow that we just made mention of is to be paralleled with an arrow found higher up on the page, where the Mishnah in our version said Hazayis Rishon Megargaro Barosh Hazayis. True that we have printed in the Mishnah Megargaro, but it's really the Gemara that has to analyze what's the accurate expression. Now you'll ask, what's the difference between these two words, Megargaro and Megalgaloi? So this is explained in the Rashi Ksav Yad. He points out that the expression Megargaro is a reference to the collection of olives that are not fully ripened. Megalgalo would be the collection of olives that are left on the tree until they become ripened. So we are trying to focus on, when we talk about collecting the olives during the first olive collection, are we collecting fully ripened olives or not fully ripened? Toshma, so the Gemara answers by quoting a source. The source itself is quite long, and you'll see how it's quite similar to the Mishnah. The source will also be using the word that we are looking for, and hence it will be the source of clarification for how to learn the Mishnah as well. Shemen, we should say, toshma, desanya, shemen zayas mi zay soy. This opening phrase is a little bit unclear. Therefore, we will learn the Rashi to explain what this is talking about. So Rashi in the Ksav Yad on the lower part of the page says, Klomar, Ha'oimer hare olai shemen zayas. If a person accepts upon himself and in a vow to bring shemen zayas, yeah, ha'shemen shispashel v'yismale shmono v'odo bazayas, it should be from olives that become full of oil while still on the tree. Dekro kodorish. We are making a reference to the pasuk that says Mishemen Zayas Zoch, Klomar, Mevushal, completely ripened, Sheyetse Mimenu Beloy Teino, that as a result of its being fully ripened, oil will exude forth from it on its own without the need for subjecting it to a heavy beam. And of course, we're talking about to get out the first batch of oil. So the Bryce is describing someone who accepted upon himself to bring Shemen Zayas. It has to be Shemen Zayas mi zay so. And as we saw in the Rashi Ksavya, that would mean that it's capable of producing oil already from the tree. Namely, the olives, when taken off the tree, are completely ripe. Mikan Amru, the source goes on, Zayas Rishon, the first season of collection, Megalgaloi Barosh Hazayas, the Kainsoi Lebeis Habad. We saw already the expression explained by Rashi. Megaglo means those that are fully ripened. So they are gathered from the tree and placed in konso and gathered together in the olive press. V'tochano berechayim, they are ground. These olives are ground, or crushed or ground. V'noisnoi basalim, and then placed in baskets. Shemen ayotz mimenu ze hoyo rishon. The oil that exuded forth from these crushed olives placed in baskets is called first batch of first season. Now, second batch of first season, to'an b'koro, afterwards, like we saw in the Mishnah, these crushed olives, after they finish their first exusion, they're then gathered and placed under a beam. Shemen ayotzi mimenu ze hoyo sheni. The oil that comes out from the pressure under the beam is referred to as the second batch of the first season. Chozar uporak v'tochan v'to'an ze hoyo shlishi. If they were at this point, we're saying the olives of stage two were then taken out and ground up and then placed again under a weight. And the oil that exuded from that is called Zehoyo Shlishi. Harishon lemenorah v'shar lemenachos. V'chein zayis sheni. And here we're saving ink, so to speak. The same thing with regard to the second olive collection. Zayis Shlishi, the third olive collection. Otno b'veis habarat shiloku male l'roshagag v'soso k'min t'mora. Ad Shizuvu Meimov. This is very similar to what we saw in the Mishnah. They were the third season of olive collection were piled up in the press until they became soft, and they were then placed on the roof. And we mentioned that was to dry them off from the moil, from some type of liquid exusion that came out of them, not oil exusion. The oisoiso came in tomorrow, ad shezuvu meimov. They were then piled into a, tomorrow would be a type of rounded pile, until their liquid would flow forth. The konsul beis abad, the tochno berechayim. After this watery substance would flow forth from them. After that, they were then gathered into the olive press. The tochno ground up berechayim in the grinder. The no snow besalim, they were then placed in baskets. The oil that came forth at this point was called first batch of third season. Toan bekuro shemenayotzi mimenu zeh hoyosheni parak chazar v'tochan v'toan zeh hoyoshlishi. All of this we have seen before. Harishon lemenorah v'ashar lemenachas. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Here Rabbi Yehuda appears in the Brisa, unlike the Mishnah where Rabbi Yehuda appeared at each individual stage. Here he appears at the end. So Rabbi Yehuda comments, as far as the Tanakhama said that the grinding is done in a rechayim, Rabbi Yehuda says it was not subjected to a grinding in a grinder. A grinder essentially were two heavy stones between which were placed the item you wanted to be ground up. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't do that. Rather, a crushing device is used. A machteshes, a grinder, that's... You find the term machteshes used often with the production of spices, a crusher as opposed to a grinder, if that helps. V'loi hoyotoyin b'kurel bavonim, and when the weight was used, the weight were stones and not a beam. V'lo hoyonoysa b'salim alilasoich sviva sasal. And as far as the initial batches were concerned, when we put them in baskets, like we saw in the Mishnah here, Rabbi Yehuda comments that they weren't placed into the bottoms of the baskets, but rather along the sides of the baskets. And we pointed out that if they were placed in the baskets, into the bottoms of the baskets, there was a fear of extra debris coming out. So by lining the sides of the baskets, that would be a more assured type of straining. In looking at the Mishnah, We should also take note of the fact we have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. This star draws your attention to a parallel star on the upper part of the page, toward the end of the narrow lines. The Mishnah used the expression koseish v'nosein l'sochasal. The Gemara points out koseish, the lashon of koseish money. Who is that similar to? Rabbi Huda he. When we were pointing out the stars, we failed to mention that there are actually three stars. We connected up with the Mishnah, but there's also just two lines above this, a star as well, pointing to the line where Rabbi Huda mentions Kosho b'machteshes, and the dashed underlining is for this particular purpose, to draw your attention to the presence of the word Kosho under Rabbi Huda's teaching. So when you see the Mishnah use the word Kosho, Kosho is a crushing as opposed to a grinding action. So the Mishnah that says Kosho at the upper part of the page, that would be characteristic of Rabbi Yehuda. So it would indicate that the author of that section of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. Then we see the expression Tochasal. After it said Kosho in the Mishnah, it said Venosin L'Sochasal. That L'Tochasal, in the bottom, the crushed olives were then placed in the bottom of the basket, Asan L'Rabbonon. This idea is the Rabbonon's opinion. So that in one phrase or one short line, Kosho V'Nosein L'Sochasal, it would seem as if there's some type of, either call it contradiction or two opinions, being two diverse opinions appearing together in one phrase. How are we to explain that? So the Gemara answers, Hai Tana, the author of our Mishnah, Sovar L'Kavasei Bechada, he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on one count, that's with regard to the Koseish, Upliga Olei Bechada, and argues with Rabbi Yehuda with regard to how they're placed, or what part of the basket the olives are placed in. Before going on with the new Mishnah, we have a topic heading, and it says, Dirug Eichus Hashmonim Mikol Shlav Shel Yitzira. Will be a quality listing of the different oils at each stage of production. Just to review, we saw in the previous Mishnah three seasons, and in each season there were three batches of oil production. So the Mishnah here creates a type of a quality assessment or quality hierarchy with regard to all of those different stages. Harishon Shibarishon, that's the, if we refer to our numbering system, we would say that was number one of Roman numeral number one. In other words, first batch during first season, Ein Lamala Hemenu. There is no superior oil to that. The dashed underlining here will be beneficial when we want to contrast this with a similar dashed underlining later, where a different expression appears. So we said the first of the first is the top, is the best. Hasheni Shebarishon Varishon Shebasheni Shavin. The second batch of the first olive collection and the first batch of the second olive collection, Shavin, are equal. This will be questioned later on, and we'll come back to this with the use of the little star that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. But for the time being, we're saying that the second batch of the first season is equal to the first batch of the second season. Now, the third analysis, or third level of analysis, Hashlishi Shebarishon Vasheni Shebasheni, Vaharishon Shebashlishi Shavin. The third batch of the first season, the second batch of the second season, and the first batch of the third season, they're of all equal quality. Hashlishi Shebasheni Vasheni Shebashlishi, the third batch of the second season, and the second batch of the third season, Shavin, they are of equal quality. Hashlishi shevishlishi ein lemato heimenu. The third batch of the third season of olive collection, there is nothing of lesser quality than that. And once again, you see the dashed underlining so that you can see the Mishnah makes reference to top quality and bottom quality. Af ha-menochas hoyu bedin shi'itanu shemen zayezach. Menochas as well should logically have been able to, or should logically have been required to have top quality oil, which we call shemen zayezach. Now, what's the logic? Ma menoro sheino lachilo tuno shemen zayezach. Mind you, the menorah, which was not for consumption purposes, it's pointed out in the Rashi, consumption means consumption by the mizbeach, by the altar. So the menorah, which did not involve any offering on an altar, it was put in the menorah, which produced light. And yet, even though it was not li'achilo, it required shemen zayezach, which is a reference to top quality oil. Menachas shein lachilo, you know, din shiitanu shemen zayezach. The menachas, which were for offering on the mizbeach, after all, the oil was combined with the mincha. There was a handful drawn off of the mincha, the kmitza. And that kmitza was contained flour with oil in it. So, and that kmitza was burnt on the mizbeach. So shouldn't it all the more require the highest level quality of oil? That's as far as logic is concerned. Therefore, Talmud Lomer, the Pusuk, comes along to say, Zach Kosis Lamaor. The Ein Zach Kosis Lemenochas. The Mishnah mentions Zach Kosis, which is a function of, Kosis is an expression referring to crushed, and Zach is pure. The pure oil that comes from that first crushing stage is La Mo'or. That's what it says in the Pasuk. Mo'or is a reference to light, which is associated with the menorah. And we infer from that that the requirement of Shemen Zayezach is for Mo'or and not for Menachas. The Gemara opens up with a question with which we will navigate with our stars. So we have a little star to the right-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Omid Aleph, and we already introduced the need to raise a question when we read the Mishnah. So you'll notice the star there, and at that point it said in the Mishnah that the second batch of the first season, the second batch of oil production during the first season, and the first batch of oil production during the second season were of equal nature. Well, the Gemara asks, Shavin, how can you say they're equal? V'amris, but it was already stated in the Mishnah, where we had used in the Mishnah a double underlining previously, Rishon l'menorah v'shar l'menachas, that the first batch was for the menorah and the rest were for the menachas. Now, if you say that, you can't compare first batch of second season. First batch of second season is what the Mishnah calls Rishon l'menorah v'shar l'menachas, that it's for the menorah, and what happens afterwards is for the menachas. Whereas the second batch of the first season, that's part of the phrase Hashar l'menachas. That's not a Rishon anymore. It's the second batch of the first season. So if that be the case, how can the Mishnah say Shavin? So the Gemara answers, Omer Rav Nabritzuk, by Shavin, what does Shavin mean here? Shavin l'menachas. It means they are both suitable for the menachas. And we explained earlier that when the Mishnah teaches us that Shemen Zayezach is for Mo'or, it simply means that for the menorah, the first batch is binding. However, as far as menachas are concerned, the need of the oil for the menachas doesn't have to come from the first batch. But if one wanted to pay the extra money for this top quality oil and use it for menachas, he could do that. So first batch of second season and second batch of first season are equal with regard to menachas. They're both suitable for menachas. Af kol Hamenachas hayu bedin v'chulei. Tanu Rabbanon. We have a Tanaic source, and before learning the source itself, we should take advantage of 2 points here. The first point is the nosei, the topic heading in the outside margin, which will deal with that which we already described, shemen zayezoch koshel menochas avol eino me'akev bohen. The pure, highest form of oil is acceptable for menochas. All that we are trying to say here is that it's not binding. There's also a pasuk that we will like to refer to, and it's quoted in part in the inside margin, Vayikra, Perek Chof Zayin Pasuk Chof. It says, V'yikhu elecho shemen zayezoch kosis lamaor lahalois ner tamid. So from that pasuk, the source opens up, Zach. Ein zach elanoki. The word zach means pure, clean and pure. Rebuta Omer, kosis. That word, which was also in the pasuk, ein kosis ela kosush. Kosis means something that's crushed. Yochol yehe zach kosis posel menachas. Could it be? Could one think that if the pure crushed pure oil coming from the crushed olives is unacceptable for menachas? Well, we say to that, not so. Talmud Omar v'soron soiles bolul b'shemen kosis. We see shemen kosis used for menachas. In Cain, ma talmud Omar lamaor. So why did we see in the pasuk? It says kosis lamaor, meaning for the light for the menorah. Elo mitnei hachisachon. What we're saying here is that the use of the oil for the menorah and being binding for the menorah and not binding for the malchus was because of a consideration called chisachon. My chisachon. What is meant by that? Omar Rav Elazar, hatora chosa al mamoinon shel Yisrael. The Torah has concern over the money of the population, of the Jewish people. The Rashi explains that menachas were much more common than the olive oil for the menorah. The olive oil for the menorah was just 3.5 lug per day for the entire public. The amount of oil that was associated with the menachas was much more. And therefore, if we would have a requirement of shemen zayis zach for menachas, it would involve a great expenditure on the part of the population. And because of our concern for them, for the population, not having to spend so much money, we understand that the shemen zayis zach is not binding with regard to the menachas. The Rashi Ksavyad also elaborates. He points out that when the Gemara asks the question, "My chisachon," even though we know that chisachon means saving of money, the question of the Gemara is, "Who cares?" So why is it so important for us that there is saving of money? So to that, the Gemara answers, "Well, the Torah itself is concerned with people saving their money." And Rashi explains in a more elaborate fashion where that point is learned from. It happens to be learned from a case of houses that are declared to have ritual impurity as a result of nigei batim, type of discoloration that afflicts houses, causing them to become tomei. The Torah mentions that the vessels in the house, before any declaration is made, should be removed. Even primarily the earthenware vessels are removed. Earthenware vessels, once becoming impure, have no purification for them. They're a total loss. Therefore, you see, since the Torah says, Ufinu es habayis, remove the earthenware vessels from the house before any ruling is made with regard to the house, the Torah is concerned with people's possessions and doesn't want them to experience loss. So that would be the source for this well-known concept of HaTorah Chosa al Mamonon She Yisrael. And that was alluded to by the term chisachon. And as a result of that, just to review the main point, shemen zayezoch, the expensive top quality oil, was not demanded for the use of menachas. Tzav es b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu elecho shemen zayezoch. That's the pasuk, and here we want to emphasize the word elecho in the pasuk, where we've dashed underlined that. Velo li, the Pusuk is saying, take oil for your menorah for yourselves. That's vikoy lecha. It's for you, not for me, says the Almighty. Lo la oiro ani tzorech. The Almighty is explaining, declaring, I don't need the light that's produced by the menorah. This will be elaborated on a bit more later. Shulchan b'tzafon u'menorah b'dorom. The shulchan, which had the lechem upon him, the 12 loaves, sometimes you'll find the translated as the showbreads, those were in the northern part of the Heichal, the enclosed area of the Beis HaMikdash. They sat on the table there from week to week. And u'menorah b'dorom, the menorah which produced light, was in the southern part of the Heichal. As Rashi explains, they were not next to each other. When a person, let us say, wants to eat a meal, so he eats his meal with the light, with the source of light next to him. Sometimes we refer to having a meal by candlelight. At one point in time, candlelight was the primary form of illumination. So a person who wants to eat would have the light right next to him. In the Heichal, where there was an issue of food represented by the breads and source of light as represented by the menorah, they were not next to each other. So this idea is now explained. Omer Rabbi Zrika, Omer Rabbi Elazar, lo la'achilo ani tzorach, v'lo la'ora ani tzorach. I don't need the breads for eating, says the Almighty, and I don't need the light for illumination either. In other words, I don't need all of this. It's not done for me as a result of a need that I, the Almighty, has. Before going further, we have a topic heading, and let's read it together. Shulchan u'menorah shel beis hamikdash, the bread, the table that held the breads, and the menorah of the beis hamikdash, lo la'achil v'lo la'oro ani hakadosh baruch hu tzorach. They were not there to benefit the Almighty. Hamenorah hoisa edus sheshchina sherev Yisrael. The menorah was a testimony that the divine presence dwells amongst the Jews. Let's now see these points developed in the Gemara. The pasuk in Sefer Melachim, which deals with the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, it says, "Vayas labayis chalonei shkufim atumim." The windows that were included in the construction of the Beis HaMikdash were described as shkufim atumim. The term shkufim is something referred to as wide. Atumim, something as narrow. So that the windows of the Beis HaMikdash were not a simple square window frame that one is familiar with, but rather the wall, bear in mind, was rather thick, so that at one point the window was narrow, and at the other point it was wide. And now this is explained further. Tana, shkufin mi bifnim. That means from within, the inside, the windows were wide. The atumim mi bachutz. The outside, the windows came to a narrow slit. Now, this type of construction is the opposite of the way one would construct his own house. If one was constructing a dwelling and he wanted to have maximum illumination, he would see to it that if there was a question of wide and narrow, that the wider part of the window would be on the outside. That's the point at which the natural sunlight is coming into the house. You would want to gather, so to speak, as much sunlight as possible. Hence, you would want to have the wide side outside. The Beis HaMikdash had the narrow side facing the outside, the wide facing the inside. It's pointed out, lo li'oiro ani tzorech. What might be added here by way of explanation is that the Almighty is declaring here, I don't need light, but rather the light that's produced in here, inside, is being cast outwards, if you will. Michutz leparoches ha'edus ba'oil moyed. This is a pasuk in the context of the menorah. and it says that it was placed outside the dividing curtain, in the dividing between the Kodesh HaKadosh and the Holy of Holies and the rest of the Heichal. That's where the menorah stood, and it's a testimony. That's it's Michutz the Paroches Ha'edus Boyom Oed. And the drasha on this is Edus Hu L'chol Boy Olam Shashchina Shor B'Yisrael. The drasha is taking the word Edus that's connected with Paroches, but applying it to the menorah, and saying that the menorah was a testimony to all members of the global community that the divine presence dwells amongst Israel. V'im toimar l'oira anitzarech, and if one would even think that maybe the Almighty needs the light, that would in fact be ridiculous. V'lo kol arboim shana shachu Yisrael b'midbar, during the 40 years sojourn of the Jewish people in the midbar, lo hochu elo li'oro, the Almighty produced the light for them. So to think that we are producing light for the Almighty would border on the ridiculous. Elo, so what is the purpose of this light? Elo edus hu l'choboi olam sheshchina shor b'Yisrael. But rather, the light of the menorah served as a testimony that there was divine presence dwelling in Israel. Well, my edusa, what is the testimony of this remarkable phenomenon of having the divine presence amongst Israel? Simply by lighting a candelabra with wicks and oil, how in the world does that serve as a testimony? Oh, my Rava. Rava explains, it's not the mere lighting of the menorah, but rather it's a phenomenon that accompanied or that was characteristic of the menorah. And it's as follows. Zeh ner ma'aravi. This is a reference to the ner ma'aravi. There are different pshatim on what Ner Ma'aravi is. Some explain it's the central candle on the menorah that was bent a little bit toward the western part of the Beis HaMikdash, facing the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Anyway, for our purposes, the exact definition of which one of the candles is described as Ner Ma'aravi is not essential to this sugya. This will be dealt with on another occasion, but nevertheless, this Ner Ma'aravi should noisnin bo shemen kemidas chavroiseho. It had a quantity of oil that was equal to any one other of the candles. There were seven candles on the menorah, so the Ner Ma'aravi had received the same amount of oil as any one other Ner. A general explanation of this phrase is that it was the first to be lit in the evening, toward the evening. That was the done at the end of the day, and it would burn together with the other neros throughout the night. By the morning, the others would go out, would their oil supply, so to speak, under natural circumstances, used up. This Ner Ma'aravi, in a miraculous fashion, continued burning till the end of the day. That's what's incorporated here in this idea of Mimeno Hayomadlik Uvbo Hayomasayim. In the Rashi, there's quite a bit more detail, but for our purposes, we said that the menorah was a testimony to the presence of the divine presence in Israel. Well, certainly was. You put the same amount of oil in all of the candles. The Ner Ma'aravi burnt basically twice as long, not only through the whole night, but through the whole day as well, at the same time all the others went out. That's a miracle. And that miracle was a constant testimony all of the years that the Beis HaMikdash stood, that the divine presence dwelt in Israel. Now, we mentioned all the years of the Beis HaMikdash. There is more to say about that, because after the era during the second temple of the, after the passing of Shimon HaTzadik, this diminished a bit, and that's a function of the diminishing of the level of the divine presence because of the increased sinning level of the people. and hence the distancing of divine presence. The Nosei topic heading that accompanies this new Mishnah we have in the outside margin, Yayin Vinasochem. Up till now we've discussed oil. Now we switch to wine that's used for the Nesochem. The Nesochem were a wine offering that accompanied many animal offerings. There is also a possibility of a person donating Nesochem on their own, but in general, Nesochem are thought to be the wine that's offered together with animal sacrifices. So that's Yayin LeNesochem, and our note says, Me'efo hoyu mevi'in oisoi. From where was the wine brought, the wine that was used for Nesochem? So we're interested in the grapes that were used for producing the wine, and we'll also discuss the wine production itself, barrels and quantities, all in, fitting into this picture of from where the wine was supplied. The Mishnah, Me'ayin hoyu mevi'in es hayayin, from where was the wine brought for Nesochem? The next two words are place names, Keduchim v'Atulim. Grapes that are produced in these places, alpha liayin is alpha, first quality for wine production. Shnia lahen, a second level, in second place, base rima, ubase lavon bahar, ukfar signa babika. Three additional places. The Mishnah goes on to say, kol ha'arotzes hoyu ksheros, elomikan hoyu mevi'in. All regions were acceptable as far as grape production for wine. However, these places are places that were actually used. Ein mevi'in lo mibeis hazvalim. Now, the Mishnah goes on to tell us, and like we've seen before with regard to the oil, there's certain types of fields that one will not bring the grapes to produce wine for Nesochem. Ein mevi'in lo mibeis hazvalim, not from fertilized fields, v'lo mibeis hashlochem, not from irrigated fields, v'lo mima shenizra b'neim, nor from vineyards that have other plants growing amongst them, amongst the vines. Vimhevi kosher. With regard to these undesirable places, the Mishnah says if one brought from these places, it would be okay. Ein mevi'in halistion, vimhevi kosher. Halistion is a type of very sweet wine. Its sweetness is a result of its being subjected to extensive sunlight. So if one brong halistion, it's interesting, you can see the word, in this word, it's probably a word of Greek origin. You see the word halo in this word, something sun-related or light-related. Ein mevi'in yoshon, divrei Rebbe. One should not bring from last year's crop. Chachamim machshir chachamim say, the chachamim disagree and say it's okay. Ein mevi'in loy mosoik velo me'ushan. The word mosok here also means sweetness, but Rashi points out that this is not a reference to sweetness as a result of sunlight, but rather sweetness that is natural to the grapes. And another pshat that Rashi gives, it could be a reference to wine that has not fermented for 40 days. So one is not to bring mosok, velo me'ushan. Me'ushan is subjected to smoke. Velo me'vushal, cooked, ve'im hevi posel. Any of these would be unacceptable for nesachim. Ve'ein mevi'in min hadolios, elo min haraglios. One should not bring from wine produced from grapes that was trellised. In other words, you'll find many times the grapevines are staked up, where stakes are stuck into the ground, and the vines creep upwards onto these structures. But rather, raglios, one is to bring for Nesachim wine produced from grapes that grew along the ground. Raglios means, literally has to do with feet. So that which grows along the ground, namely next to the place that people's feet would walk, the ground. Umin hakromim huavudim. One is to bring wine from vineyards that are tilled. Avudim is tilled or dug up, aerated. Veloi Kainsin Oisai. Now, when dealing with the grape, the wine itself, so we say, V'lo Kainsin Oisai b'chatzavim gdolim, ela b'chovios ktanas. One should not store the wine in large barrels, but rather in small receptacles. The Rashi explains, with regard to the Chatzavim Gedolim, he says, Rashi, in the upper part, also middle of the page, at the end of the Rashi, the standard Rashi commentary, he says, Lefi shekshahoyu mistabkim imenu, wine stored in large barrels, when one would draw from them from time to time, al yad means little by little, hoyu hachatzuvin misroiknin umiskalkil hayayin, the diminishing of wine quantity again and again each time would have a negative effect on the wine quality. So we don't want you to be drawing, we don't want you to be supplying wine for Nesachim that came from barrels from which wine was drawn periodically. V'eino, the Mishnah, second line from the bottom, continues, V'eino memale es hachovis ad piha, the small barrels that we just made reference to, those two should not be filled till the very top. Apparently, if the wine is filled till the very top, the wine scent escapes the barrel. Therefore, it's taught here that the barrel is not filled till the top, so that the wine scent, the reach of the wine, amasses within the barrel. And then the wine itself will retain this scent. Eino mevi mipiha. One is not to bring the wine from, not to supply the wine that is found at the top of the barrel. Mipnei hakimochim, because there is a type of white, possible frothy substance that is characteristic of wine coming from the upper surface of the barrel. Below me shuleha mipnei ashmorim, and not to bring wine for nesachim from the bottom of the barrel, because that part contains the grape sediment or grape lees. Elo mevi mishlisha meemtza. Rather, you draw wine off from the middle third of the barrel. In other words, a spigot would be attached to the barrel in its middle third, and from that point one would draw the wine. Ketzad hu bodek, how is it to be checked out? In other words, we're talking about a certain part of wine that we want, the rest of which we're saying is undesirable. So how do you know, how do you check this out? Hagizbar yoshev hakone biyado, the Gizbar, the one who is the supervising this matter, sat near those who were drawing the wine off for the Nesachim, and the Gizbar would be seated there with a rod or a staff in his hand. Zorak Hagir, at a point that it was noticed that a white substance was flowing out from the barrel. This white substance, Rashi explains, is a white substance that floats above the grape lees. So if this started to emerge from the barrel, that would indicate that this, at this point, stop drawing the wine. And hikish bekana, the gizbar would take this staff and tap the barrel, or do some tapping action, non-speech, non-verbal instructions, tapping action with the staff, which would signify that no more wine is to be drawn from this barrel. Rav Yosi Buda Omer, Shiyesh boi kmochim posel, wine that has kmochim in it is unacceptable. We saw the word kmochim at the top of the page. This is this kemach phenomenon we mentioned before is a characteristic of wine coming from the top of the barrel, the top surface. So Rav Yosi says that wine that has this kemach substance in it is unacceptable. Shinemar, the Mishnah quotes two psukim, which one pasuk refers to a meal offering, and the second pasuk refers to the wine offering. Both psukim have the word tamimim in it, meaning wholesome, complete, non-blemished. So what is meant by non-blemished? Well, in the context of the wine, which is referred to in the second pasuk he is about to quote, that would be wine that does not have kemach in it. If it's kemach free, we can call it tamimim, meaning wholesome, non-blemished. We've discussed in the past this concept in the context of meal offerings. If you recall, we spoke about wormy wheat as being a problem of a type of mum, a blemish, and hence that would be appropriate when discussing meal offerings. So he quotes two psukim, and we mentioned they refer to both the meal offerings and the wine offerings. So pasuk, the first pasuk is tmimim yulochem uminchasam. That's in effect, a connection of the end of one pasuk and the word umin chasam, which is the beginning of the next pasuk. But for the drasha purposes, tamimus, non-blemished characteristic is associated with a meal offering. And secondly, tamimim yu lochem v'niskehem. The word niskehem is what's relevant for our Mishnah, that we want tamimus, namely non-kemach wine, with regard to the nesachim, the wine used for the nesachim offerings. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.